Wonderful. Whether you heard it or not, we have just started our recording. So welcome, welcome, welcome to our February 2024 LHO and live call. I know we just got took a roll call from a bunch of people. We got some newcomers. We've got some veterans here for the call tonight. So thank you one and all for taking carving time out of your Wednesday night to be here with us, or Wednesday afternoon or Thursday morning, whatever it may be as you listen to the call here today. My name is Andy Marks. I'm normally joined by my co-host Jessica Loomer here as well, but tonight it's just me. Jesse, I'll give you the same spiel I would give you if Jessica were here, though, and that spiel includes a little history, a little background on how these LHO and live calls began back in 2014. Not quite 10 years ago, but in June of 2014, Jessica and I were attending our first LHON conference, which was in Pittsburgh that year. And we realized, along with several other participants there at the conference, that there were immense benefits from connecting with other people who are part of this community. That yes, we have a very unique experience in our day-to-day lives, especially when we are rarely interacting with other folks who are blind or have low vision or are affected by LHON. But at the same time, while that's very unique to us, it ends up being a very shared experience across other folks who share the community that connects us, which is LHON. We were both pretty newly affected at that point in time, but we wanted to find a way to spread that benefit of connection throughout the entire year as best we could without having to fly to the same place several times a year. So a couple months later, in August of 2014, we had our first LHON live call, which we've been doing monthly since then. So well over 100 calls at this point in time and approaching 10 years. So thank you to those folks who've been here since 2014. There, we love when we have new callers in as well. We try and use these calls to be as beneficial in the way that we need any given month. So these calls have taken a number of different formats. We've had guest speakers from time to time. We have had particular topics of interest sometimes in some months. There were periods where we brought specific news topics. And these days, we welcome topics being sent to us directly. Again, my name is Andy Marks. I can be found via text or Facebook or email or lots of different ways. And Jessica Loomer can be found the same way. So tonight I'm actually going to bring a few topics that were emailed to us. So thank you to the person who emailed those to us earlier in the, or I guess later in January, rather. And so we'll talk about those, but also we want to use this time to talk about any questions that you may have on your mind, any stories, any big wins of the month, whatever you want to talk about. And then toward the end, we'll also tell you about several other LHON related calls that will happen later in February. A last piece of housekeeping I will give before I get into some of those questions is related to topics that aren't necessarily off limits, but areas that we may not be the best ones to answer. So if the topics happens to steer toward medical advice or legal advice or even employment advice, there are questions that we are happy to give you advice on, but sometimes these are areas where we may not be experts and we may be better equipped to direct you toward that expert rather than answering it ourselves. So right now is the time where typically I would ask Jessica how her month is going. But instead, I will take the opportunity to get quickly into a few topics. I know February's off and running for a lot of us. We are a full week into the month, and it's already and it's a shortish month despite being a leap year and us getting that 29th day this year. We talked about folks having to navigate rain there out in California, which is something that is atypical for them. But I will highlight the fact that it's a lot of rain, regardless of who you are. And it's an interesting time for a lot of us. We talk about employment. It's been a weird time for lots of us. Employment's been weird. I know lots of companies are having layoffs, so that may be something we want to talk about at the same time, but there are any number of topics we can talk about. I actually have a cruise that I'm getting on at the end of the weekend. So if anyone has questions about that, I'm happy to talk about those too. But before opening up the call, to other questions, I want to make sure I cover a few questions that were sent our way. And I'm going to bring those up while I talk. And unfortunately, we do very little editing of this here call. So while I bring this up, you're just going to have to wait. Bear with me. All right, here are the questions. And I'm going to kind of go through each of these one at a time, and you're going to have to realize that I'm reading pretty slowly. But the first one is really, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but it's basically asking, typically, how long does it take from onset or diagnosis of LHON to get back to work, for whatever that means for some folks? That may mean back to part or full time. It may mean back to the same job that person was doing. It may be back to an entirely new career. So thank you for the question, first and foremost. I'm going to kind of give my answer here and then allow folks, feel free to weigh in if you'd like before we head to the next question. But in my mind, and I started to allude to what my answer is in the sense that this is so dependent on the situation, the career that someone is doing, and frankly, the career they want to approach and or work towards after diagnosis and after realizing that they likely will have low vision for the foreseeable future, if I can call it that. So I'll first give you my experience and then give you some other experiences that I know, because I know a good benefit that we have from the LHON community is to be able to hear lots of other stories. So I actually spoke at that LHON conference that I mentioned earlier in Pittsburgh almost 10 years ago now, and talked about how there were some perception-based stereotypes that I was challenged with at my work. I was working for Disney at the time, actually, back in 2014. And the bar at which people held me to, or the standards that people held me to, were affected in a way that were not overly helpful in terms of the optics of how my work was perceived. And as a result, like, I know that I was not given opportunities that I had previously been given prior to being affected by LHON. So that certainly affected my career. That said, I was able to request some accommodations and largely continue my same career trajectory without detouring away from it entirely. Within a year or two, I was realizing, okay, this team is really starting to view me so differently, or comparing my pre and post diagnosis work in such a way that is unfavorable to me. And I realized I wanted to transition and actually move to a different team, still at Disney, was promoted while I was on that other team and did well. But this story can be very different for different people. I'd highlight the fact that a lot of people who have LHON are affected by LHON prior to starting a career. So for those folks, a career without LHON isn't something they can speak of at all. For other folks, I know of folks who were in careers where they had to step away from those careers, maybe because proper accommodations or reasonable accommodations were not enough for them to continue doing those careers in some way. Or just as likely, they decided that knowing this part about themselves, knowing this part of their identity, they'd rather do something else. Some of those people return to school to get an additional degree. Maybe they basically start to grow a different skill set or lean into some other area that they may want to turn into a career. So all of those are options. And I would say that could take anyone the amount of time of zero time, basically continuing their career, up to a decade of realizing what it is they want to do, pursuing that, getting the necessary credentials, and really applying themselves in that field. Because this is a community here, I'd love to hear if there are folks here who have similar stories, or even, and specifically, how long you would say it took you to recalibrate or get to your new normal career-wise, specifically. All right. Well, as I haven't heard anyway, I'm going to go ahead and keep moving forward. Obviously, we can go back to these questions whenever we need to, but this second question is actually quite related.
Andy, I'm going to just jump in and just say, I just want to support what you said, that like, from what I've heard over the years, you know, like some people just keep on trucking, and some people take a, quite a while to make an adjustment. And I just want to reinforce what you said, that like any of that's okay. You know, I think maybe the person who had asked the question originally, on the one hand, they'd heard a lot of people talking at conference about their career and how they'd maintained careers, but they hadn't heard the part about how, but it took about a year or two till I kind of figured it out. And I think this person was wondering, like, am I slow? Like they're talking about what they're doing, but I'm not hearing the part about, and it took me a year or two to kind of learn the assistive technology and learn to ask for help. And is it okay that it takes some time to adjust? And I think you're on the right track to say, yeah, it's really okay for there to, you know, take time. And that's not unusual, whether the time is away from the job or whether the time is while at the job, but kind of doing it differently. I just think you're saying the right thing, that obviously everyone's different. And, you know, maybe other people did want to speak up or maybe not, but I know I've heard over the years so many different stories where, you know, like you said, it can be or not returning to work, or, you know, it's just a huge range, right?
Yeah, I mean, rather than calling any of them normal or not normal, I would say they're all normal. I mean, because exactly. I know multiple stories that fit into each of these criteria. And to your point, I mean, some people take the opportunity to really reevaluate in their 20s or 30s or 40s, 50s, what they want to do career-wise in a way that other people would have naturally done sometimes, even if they didn't lose their vision. And I think all of this can be celebrated. And basically, sometimes it means that what you've chosen requires a little more time. And that's good. And that's great. And that's okay, too.
And I think I did hear someone else start to speak. Yep. Yeah, go ahead.
Andy, this is Eugene. Sorry, I was eating dinner. Decided I was going to stay quiet. But no, this applies to me. Hopefully, it's helpful for whoever else. I took a year off, of course, after losing my vision. I was a UX designer, which means I just helped make software easier to use. So I draw out just how applications looked, websites, things like that. So it was a pretty big, you know, transition trying to get back into it. I got in 2021, I had a former colleague who was in charge of a UX group, and he decided he was going to hire me on. He just really fortunate to get him to, he just wanted me to learn technology, assistive technology, and he gave me that privilege to figure that out. I actually worked there for a year and a half. I had a really big monitor, a special keyboard with like big letters. I would use, you know, design programs like Photoshop and Figma and all these other, you know, tech design tools. I was able to do it. It just, everything took a long time to do, you know, like 3-4 times longer than it usually would. I'd have to lean in super close. Of course, everyone in the office could see my monitor because it was so big. It wasn't a monitor, it's a TV, basically, high resolution TV. Everyone was super supportive, but I found that I just couldn't continue to, because it was really hard to continue catching on to designing, of course. So I decided after a year and a half to take a break. That was last year, January of last year. I didn't know what I was going to do next. I had someone call me up and say, hey, there's a blind camp, you know, why don't you come over there help us out, just be a counselor. So did that for a few weeks. And then I thought, okay, I need to keep this going. And I started volunteering at the local guide dog school here in the LA area. I haven't given up on designing, but I do feel like the door is closing. And I'm just kind of in this space where, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of something that I'm coming to terms with, I'll say. And I'm 51, so I lost my vision at 47. It's really hard to relearn things. I was really good at what I did. With design, you got to be really accurate, and just wasn't able to do that. And yeah, I don't know what's going to happen next. But I was able to do it. You know, I had the support of my coworkers. I guess it's just how much you can handle. And just for me, you know, I wasn't able to. So I'm just taking a break. But that's my story. So I don't know if that helps anyone.
Eugene, but thank you so much for sharing. I mean, I think that's a phenomenal story to share. And I appreciate your vulnerability and your just honesty and transparency there. I will admit that I work in UX research. So I know the world you're talking about. I smiled when you said Figma. And although I don't consider it the most accessible software ever, I know what you're talking about. So I welcome a conversation with you about some of this, even one-on-one at some point in time. But I'll tell you right now, having been on over 100 of these calls, your story will be helpful to someone listening, whether they're here tonight or whether they're going to listen after the fact. So thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, for sure.
Any other thoughts from folks before I keep us moving? All right.
I'm sorry.
Go for it.
I'm sorry. The question was kind of related to just understanding what was it kind of related to? It was work and then bringing into the adjusting to when you started losing your sight to when you lost your sight to then having to adjust to the workforce. Is that how I understand it?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's typically how I would think of it. Like, how long does it take most folks to adjust work-wise to a new normal or whatever is needed for them to continue in their career?
Gotcha. So, unfortunately, I guess I look at it this way in a bright side for myself, but in a way, I had to learn to grow out of my comfort zone and learn to ask. Because in the world that we live in, no matter if you're disabled or not, people will always need some kind of assistance or help in some kind of way. And so I learned to try to, I can't think of the darn words this evening. Advocate. That's it. Advocate for myself. And Eugene made a very good point in making sure to ask and to bring up those kind of things that you may need. Now for myself, I lost my sight at 15, 16 years old. And so I wasn't really in the prime years of my workforce or anything, but what I experienced was trying to get into the workforce. And that was my first, I think, official job was McDonald's. And that was kind of just janitorial work. And so I had to learn and adapt to, hey, okay, here's your supplies and this is what you need to do. Well, there were certain things that people weren't telling me that I was doing wrong or that I could have done differently to make sure that I did the job effectively. And so I found out later, even close to the end of the timeline that I was working, that people weren't telling me, hey, you know, you should have been doing it this way, or you should have been doing it differently, to where I could have learned how to adapt. Now, even after the fact, I've learned, okay, hey, people aren't going to speak up. I need to speak up and ask, hey, how can I do this differently? Or how could I have done this better? And it's one of those things that I've learned as I've continued to grow in the workforce, especially with a vision impairment, that no matter who you are, you will always need to ask some kind of help or assistance. It doesn't matter technology or not. That's kind of my experience with things and learning to grow, adapt, learn from others, no matter if they have a disability or not. You just kind of have to advocate for yourself more times than not. And that's the little rough side of it, is you got to be outside of your comfort zone to do so. So that's my experience.
Your name's Matthew, correct?
Correct.
Thank you, Matthew. I mean, I think you highlighted a couple good things there that I want to just underscore. One, that you need to advocate for yourself. I think that's really important for us all to know. And I would highlight a lot of these lessons are things that people who have quote unquote normal vision should learn as well, but maybe it's not quite as necessary, or maybe they can go longer without these lessons. And so the first one is that it's good and strong and powerful to advocate for yourself when you need something. In our case, maybe an accommodation. In our case, maybe some feedback, the way you were describing your job at McDonald's. But also another thing is that being able to ask for help, in our case, it's maybe help to do something that we would have more difficulty doing. But even if you weren't dealing with a vision impairment the way you described it, I mean, asking for help, delegating projects, all of these are really strong career skills to learn in general in order to be a good, strong employee wherever you happen to be working. So I would highlight a lot of these things that while they are more necessary for us to learn, they help you be a better employee, period. So I really do think a lot of these things are important. And one other thing occurred to me as you were speaking that really helped me a lot. I'll go back 10 years ago. I was 25 and losing my vision and didn't know what this would mean for me. And I remember February 8th, 2014, if I remember correctly, so that would be tomorrow, 10 years ago, would be the day that I first heard the words Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy in our neuro-ophthalmologist office and heard that, okay, there's no treatment for this and I will likely be legally blind the rest of my life. I was a very ambitious early 20-year-old employee at Disney at the time, and I'd set these goals where I would meet different career marks and hurdles and when I would reach different checkpoints. And I based a lot of this on goals that I had previously, objectives that I wanted to achieve. And I would have shared a lot of those with my dad, who was a hero of mine in his own career. And he and I would have worked on those goals together. But when I lost my vision, it wasn't my idea. It was my dad's idea to basically say, hey, let's, like, all of those goals are on hold right now. Those are, we're not working toward those. Imagine your clock has stopped, that you are like, we're not moving forward. Your whatever it is, your hourglass is not losing sand at this point in time. You are working on a new goal right now, and that is adjusting to this. We'll get back to those goals. Like, don't worry about that. Those are still going to be there for you when you want to get there. And as I said earlier, like, your time with that hourglass standing still could be 2 weeks or could be 20 years. It doesn't matter. But I do encourage all of you to give yourselves grace the same way that you deserve others to give you grace as you adjust to a new normal in this case. And it could be a new normal right when you first reached your, right when you were affected by LHON. It could be a new normal right when you came to terms with the fact that you have LHON. And it could be 20 years after you lost your vision even. Regardless of when that time is, you owe yourself grace the same way that others owe you grace. And I encourage that mindset. It was very helpful for me. So I didn't see myself as losing time. I saw myself as, okay, like, I'm now accomplishing this goal and those goals will be there for me in the future. I don't know if that's helpful to anyone else, but it was really helpful for me when my dad gave me that mindset a decade ago now. Okay, well, Eugene, Matthew, thank you so much for your feedback there. I am going to transition us to the second of four questions that I got this month. And this one's pretty straightforward, but it's asking which companies, which typical companies do we recommend, if any, what to say, key companies, maybe a list of those which have, what to say, initiatives for hiring people with disabilities or those that are especially inclusive from a workforce perspective. I'm curious if any of you all have thoughts here. I know some tech companies have recently made or begun initiatives to have inclusive workspaces. Sometimes accessibility teams, and Jessica's not here to speak about this specifically, but a lot of those teams that are very focused on accessibility oftentimes want to include people who may be users of some of those accessible features. So sometimes that's a great place to end up. At some tech companies, they also have realized, I mean, I can speak for Amazon when I say that they've realized that there are bottom line benefits to including people with disabilities as employees to represent that community and ensure that products are accessible, because when they're accessible, more people are able to be customers. So at the end of the day, that's a great place to be as well. Outside of those, I will highlight an organization that I partner with called Insite, it's spelled N-S-I-T-E. That's a nonprofit organization that was spun off of National Industries for the Blind that partners with both employers and people who are legally blind, or actually veterans as well, to connect the dots. So help employers who would like to hire people with disabilities and help people with disabilities find employers. So if you are out there hunting for a new job or a new career, I encourage finding lots of resources, whether it be Insight or another similar organization that may be able to help you in that way. Before moving forward, are there any other companies that people want to speak about as being especially whether accommodating or inclusive in their hiring practices?
Hey, this is Eugene again.
This is Bo. Oh, go ahead.
So my parent company was NBC Universal, and they have, you know, a really robust accessibility team. Same with Fandango, which is the specific unit I worked in. Of course, you know, LinkedIn, just like you were saying, Amazon, all these tech companies across all different types of jobs, they've really made an effort. So, you know, it doesn't have to be super computer based or anything like that. It could, just be testing out software. It could be in managerial positions for accessibility. So there are a lot of opportunities. I don't even know what they all are, but I know the high tech communities are really into, helping people out.
And this is Bo. Sorry, I didn't introduce myself earlier because I joined late, but I'm from New York. I would just, when I hear questions like this, just try not to close yourself off to only things that you've heard other people say are good, just because, you know, there's a whole world of options that are out there that should be able to, you know, work. And, you know, it's sort of like when people want to know which job they should do, and it's sort of like look inward and try to see what you would want to do, because I think you can really do a lot once you sort of learn how, you know, and sometimes these questions I feel like might close your mind a little to different ideas that might even be better for you.
I love that, Bo. No, I mean, you're right that I think a lot of us feel that way, but we don't even think to say it after having seen so many different types of careers. But you're right that a lot of people who are new to the community or new to low vision or the blind community at large don't recognize that there are people who have low vision or are blind who are doing any number of careers and really are testament to how all of those are really possible. So thanks for highlighting that.
And I want to say, I think whoever asked the question though too, is I think we all that have been through this recognize that point where you're like, I've started to realize I can do something, but I can't begin to think about what it would be and just want someone to tell me just do this job and you could do it. So
yeah.
I get where the question comes from too.
Sometimes and, you just want answers. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, someone else.
Oh, it's Lisa. I was just going to say one thing that I often find is that when an individual is in the workforce and they suddenly are dealing with LHON vision loss, it's super easy to look at their current job and go, well, there's no way I could do that blind, like no way. And so there's sort of an immediate assumption that I must leave where I'm at because it's not doable with this new vision I have. And there's a tendency to walk away without exploring the idea that with the correct accommodations and support and technology, just doing things in ways that one wouldn't think possible, the job can either be restructured or tasks can be done in new ways. And one of the benefits of considering it and thinking it, at least trying to make it work before walking away, is you've got the built-in situation of if you've been a highly valued employee up to the point of vision loss, then you know your way around, they know you, you don't have to worry about will they take a risk hiring a blind person? They've already got you. They already know you and they want to help you if the situation is right. And so it's something that I think people are really quick to assume isn't going to work out, can work out. And I would just encourage people, if they're listening to this in the future, or if someone's on here and has experienced that, share an experience if you want to. But I've heard it many times and encourage people to at least consider it.
Yeah, I love that point. I mean, and one thing you said, Lisa, which I think is important here, is that the idea or the mindset that if I lost my vision, there's no way I can continue doing what I'm doing. Because, and in reality, while that's not true at all, it is true in the short term, but it's not specifically true to you in the short term. It was true for all of us in the short term. It's true for me in the sense that regardless of what career anyone is doing, if they had what is considered normal vision and lost it overnight, they could not do that job the next day, but they can do that job with all the things you said. You said accommodation, you said technology. I'd add training to that list. And frankly, some degree of time. But to your point, if you are a valued employee, like the time that it would require for you to get up to speed is more than worth its weight in gold for those employers to have you be that continued valued employee in the future. And I would say that there needs to be some forgiveness given to folks as that training occurs, as you get up to speed. The fact that one day you may be less productive in terms of producing widgets or whatever job it is you're doing than you were the day prior, that's okay. You will get back to that level. And frankly, I'd say you will get back to being more productive or adding as much value to the company. And I don't think that needs to be something that comes overnight for you to think you will be able to accomplish it.
And I think the exciting thing about that happening too is if you go back to the original idea of what companies are friendly and open-minded and all that, each time this happens, you've added one new company to that list, because a company that may not have had to deal with this before, they've never had a person, needing these accommodations. So the workplace isn't structured for it. They've never seen this kind of tool. This is all new to them. Well, if you're there and you have to learn it, and everyone learns while you're learning, they're learning. And then for the next person who is also dealing with a disability, be it LHON vision loss or some other disability, this workforce has now adjusted, and that place now becomes another disability friendly place. And the people that you've worked with they become more inclusive just by having you around. And that can be a positive thing.
Love that.
Hey, Andy, it's Paul Laurie.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, I just wanted to say that there is a disability equality index, or it's an organization that does rate.
Right.
Yeah. That, you know, rates companies, and a lot of the big companies, I know the company that I worked for when I was affected, they used to really publicize their, you know, record of being included in the disability equity index, you know, year after year after year. So I do really agree with Bo too, that people shouldn't get pigeonholed in, you know, necessarily in organizations like that, because I can tell you that my big company that I worked for, in the department that I was in, I think that if the disability equality index, you know, investigators came into my department, they would have failed them for, you know, accommodations and with specific to my situation. So we're overall, the company had a great, you know, has a great track record. In my case, it really wasn't, you know, the situation, but don't mean to turn this into, you know, bitter party of one, but you know, it's there's a lot that I think people should consider, just like Matthew said too, advocating for yourself, trying, you know, deciding what's best for you in the situation, you know, what your age and longevity with your company is and things like that, as to whether or not you should try to stay on the job, advocate for within, or take a leave of absence. And, you know, it's just really such a unique situation. But as far as, you know, looking for employers who might be more, you know, amenable to hiring a disabled person or physically, for somebody with physical challenges, this DEI or Disability Equality Index may be a place to seek some information out.
Right, that's a good point. I think some of those indexes are put out by a company called Disability In, for anyone who may be interested.
Hey, Andy, it's Jetta. I just wanted to touch on what Lissa brought up earlier. I was diagnosed 5 years ago and lost vision. I remember the first thing, you know, we, of course, reached out to the Facebook group, got in touch with Lissa, and my husband, I remember, messaged Lissa and was like, she wants to quit her job. I work for the University of Louisville as a department manager. And at the time, I immediately, when I got the diagnosis, you know, just went into panic mode and thought, okay, this is it. Got to quit my job. I don't know how else I could do this, right? And I remember Lissa told my husband, tell her to stay. If she thinks she can stay, she can do it. She'll work through it. Like, just each day will get better. You just have to try. And that was the best advice. And I just started to figure out each task I had to do for my job. I was just, you know, each day got better and better. It definitely took some time. And I mean, I'll be honest, I'm 5 years in and there are still things that, you know, just the other day I figured out how to do something so much easier. And I thought, oh my gosh, what have I been doing these past 5 years? This has been taking me forever to do. So it just, you know, it really takes time. And I know that when you're in it and it first happens, that you can go into panic mode and think, well, that's it. I'll just quit. I'll find something else. But, you know, sometimes you get lucky and you're in a place that you can move on and you can figure out how to do it. But definitely being an advocate for yourself is the best way to go.
I love that. Are you still at the University of Louisville now?
I am. I am.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on whatever anniversary that is, at least 5 years.
Yeah. I'll be there 8 years now. So.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
The quick point that I would like to say is, if you're at a company, organization, whatever that might be, and you've proven that you can do the job and you're affected later in life, you know, it's different for everybody. But in my point of view, I've heard many times that companies are more than willing to try to accommodate and try to assist you versus trying to bring someone brand new trying to retrain them, trying to give them the understanding of the whole picture, the organization down to the level of your position, then just, you know, try to, you know, accommodate you to the best of their ability. And if you can advocate, then that proves that you have the courage and bravery to still move forward and to show that, hey, I am still willing to stay here and to prove myself. I'm still willing to work as hard as I am, but hey, I'm just going to need, you know, something to keep me going and something to keep, you know, to keep me here. Cause it's one of those things where it's a lot harder and a lot more time and money and effort for a company or organization to hire someone brand new than somebody's that's been there for a few years or even longer. So there is that. With even new people, I know for example, the federal government on usajobs.gov, there is a selected option, people with disabilities that you can select in the filter, that they are specifically trying to look for those with disabilities. Now, that of course is a wide range of disabilities, but if you are interested in the federal government, you can look at possibly a what's called a Schedule A letter that you can acquire through local. I forget what it's called, like a
folk rehab.
Thank you. Yes. That if you're working with somebody or that you know that can assist with, hey, I need a Schedule A, that they can help write up something of what's going on. And hey, that's kind of required for some type of federal jobs as well. So that is also an option. So
thank you, Matthew. I appreciate you adding that. I'd add for anyone who is listening, who maybe isn't in a current job situation or already has left their job, that while we're talking a lot about advocating and staying in your current jobs, it is very possible, and there are countless stories we could share as well of people who have left jobs, gone to new jobs, or found their first jobs after losing their vision and found new employers who, I don't even want to say were willing to take a chance, but realized how great of an employee they would be and did everything that was required to get them as an employee. So that's an option as well for anyone who happens to be listening. I'll keep us moving here to what is, I believe, the third question. And this is a very tactical one. So I think I'm going to be able to answer this one, but I'm curious for other folks if they have different perspectives. This one's less of a question, but any tips for navigating apps and websites? The question goes on to basically talk about how most apps do not allow for pinch to zoom. I believe it sounds like this user's using an iPhone, and therefore in most instances, this user prefers using websites where they can pinch to zoom or unpinch to zoom rather, and all of those features. I'd call out that this person who reached out, I think, may be newer to vision loss. So there are some additional tips and tricks or related to assistive technology that I would tell them about. First and foremost, if you're using an iPhone or any Mac-enabled device, there are other Zoom features that can be enabled outside of your typical pinch to Zoom or unpinch to Zoom that you would be using if you wanted to, say, zoom into a picture on your phone. Those would allow you to gesture using three fingers, zoom up to 15 times into your phone without even using any of your pinch or unpinch features. So those would be on top of the accessibility features related to Zoom. So those would allow you to actually zoom into anything on your phone. So even your lock screen, you could zoom into the time there, where that's normally not accessible to an unpinch to Zoom feature. You could use it for any app, you could use it for websites, but that would enable you to access zooming into apps exact same way that you're used to zooming into websites. I think that'd be really helpful to whoever happens to be asking that question. I've answered this same question for countless people over the past 10 years, though, who for some reason know everything about VoiceOver and use VoiceOver all the time, but for some reason are not as in touch with the ability to zoom in or use a magnifier from their devices as easily. So super encourage all of you to learn those features if you haven't already, if you have some degree of usable vision and would like to zoom into some of your devices. Any other pointers there that folks would like to call out? I think it's a pretty straightforward one, but I'd love to hear other thoughts if anyone has any.
This is Joey speaking from California. I definitely want to echo learning those features. And for anybody in here who is an Android user, there is equivalent gestures that you can do to zoom in on your devices if you have an Android. And similarly, if you are encountering issues on a laptop, there are some built-in ways to do the same thing where you can zoom in on everything. So for example, instead of just making the website bigger, you can make like everything, including the URL bigger. So if you are a Windows user, for example, there is something already built in called Windows Magnifier, where all you have to do to turn it on is press the Windows key and plus, and then you would move your mouse around as if that's your pupil.
Joey, thank you so much for sharing that. I have Windows Magnifier native on my system, so it automatically comes up. And when it doesn't, I press the Windows button and then type magnifier. So the whole idea of pressing the Windows button and then the plus sign to open it is new to me. So I appreciate you sharing that with me. But you're right that more often than not, a lot of us learn maybe screen readers and also learn other ways that you would natively zoom into something, maybe your control and scroll to make your web page maybe something north of 100%, so 200%. But to your point, that doesn't make the URL bigger. It doesn't make your mouse bigger. It doesn't make all of these things. So there are features that more often than not, like Windows Magnifier, are native to your system, like VoiceOver on your Mac OS devices as well. So lots of things to learn there and encourage a lot of you to reach out. There is also separately a LHON Assistive Technology Facebook group, I believe, that can answer lots of these questions, but a lot of them always very welcome within our normal Facebook group as well.
Hey, it's Bo again. I just had a couple of thoughts, especially if it's from somebody new to this, is, you know, trying to first learn an app the first time when you're like really trying to use it because you need to use it is always hard, just because you're kind of sometimes stressed out or busy from whatever you're trying to actually get done, you know, and it's always hard to learn something new when you're, you know, in a rush or something like that. So I do find that I still think about things all visually, and it helps to, like, when you're first learning it, still helps me to figure out how the app is visually looking, even if you're using it with VoiceOver. And so it's sort of like, sometimes I'll just download it and then like take screenshots as you're going around, so then you can really like pause and zoom in and sort of figure out what the layout was, you know, but in a kind of setting where you're not needing to use it. And then I will do that, but then I think VoiceOver just works really well with a lot of apps. Feels like a lot of apps. So if you're not someone that uses VoiceOver, but you're having an app that's hard to use, that might be a place where actually VoiceOver helps speed you along. And it might be the situation where doing a lot of the things on your phone, like browsing the internet, are really easy for you to do without VoiceOver. But then doing certain apps or things where you're having to buy something, VoiceOver might actually make those things a lot easier.
Appreciate that point, Bo. Thanks so much.
This is Joey again. I totally want to agree with Bo's point. And something else that I want to point out too is when it comes to VoiceOver, it's not an all or nothing thing. So if you are new to LHON, and if you think, well, I could still see, I don't know if VoiceOver is for me, VoiceOver is a tool, and you can choose when and where you want to use that tool. It's like how you might not always use a hammer, but you can choose, hey, this situation fits best for a hammer. Additionally, there are organizations in different parts of the world and different parts of the country that do provide free assistive technology training. And so it might be worthwhile also checking out to see if there's anything local to you. And there are LHON Facebook groups that are specific to certain regions. So if you're not already a part of one of those regional ones, that might also be something worthwhile to see if you can find local resources for training in assistive technology or any other thing that you might need training in.
Thanks so much, Joey. My favorite quote of the night so far is, you may not always want to use a hammer. Which is very true. Sorry, my phone was doing something funny there for a moment. I think there's so much. I mean, we can continue talking about assistive technology and how it's useful and how there are different tools that you can switch between constantly to be able to do whatever the different activity is. There are apps where I would never use VoiceOver. There are apps where I would never use anything but VoiceOver. So appreciate the question there. And some of this is going to be a case-by-case basis, and some of it's going to be a person-by-person basis. But from my experience, nearly everything is doable. I'm going to pivot strongly here to our fourth and final question of the night, hoping to get as much answered as we can by the top of the hour, 5 minutes from now, because I like to allow folks who are listening after the fact to know that this is roughly an hour recording. Although for anyone who happens to be here and would like to continue well past the top of the hour, we will hang around to have more conversation. But our final question that was sent to us prior to the call tonight is related to white canes and white cane usage. This person has listened to many calls in the past and heard both me and Jessica talk about how we use our white canes, how we love our white canes, how they give us independence and mobility and so much power over the world. And I'm trying not to be hyperbolic in what I'm just how I'm saying this, but they really do enable a lot of mobility for both of us. And given the fact that both of us have low vision and are not quote unquote totally blind, we've talked a lot about how the huge benefit of having that white cane is to identify ourselves to others as someone who might need assistance more than to actually use it for the functional benefits of understanding the area or ground right in front of us. So in an instance we talk about a lot is being in an airport and being able to basically provide validity to the fact that we may have low vision rather than walking up without a cane and saying, yes, I need an escort to my gate. Trust me that I'm blind. So while some people love that approach, I personally like to have a white cane in that instance for the respect that it affords me. The question that comes at the end of this long paragraph and background I'm giving is, how do people choose to physically use their canes in an instance where most of what they're using that cane for is to identify themselves? Are they using it, sweeping it back and forth on the ground? Are they tapping it? Are they just holding it by their side? The user or the question came from someone who tends to just hold it by their side and wanted to know if that's how we use it. I will say some of this will depend on who you are, your preference, how comfortable you are with your cane. I think the question also alluded to the fact that this person's only now finally coming to terms with the fact that their cane may be useful. This is a thing that a lot of people deal with and struggle with initially, maybe when they lose their vision or maybe the first time they get a cane, even if that's years after losing their vision, a degree of not wanting to use that because they quote unquote don't need it. I would say there are specifically, or what is called specifically an ID cane. This is a cane that doesn't necessarily have a functional tip at the end and is designed to basically just be held by your side to identify yourself as someone with low vision. There are lots and lots of different kind of canes with tips on the end, some designed to be swept back and forth, some designed to be tapped, some that will roll. Regardless, a lot of those are used functionally to be held at an angle and basically touch the ground in front of you. I would say that's often how I'm using my cane. In my mind, if I'm holding a cane, I'm happy to go ahead and be using it. Regardless of if the benefit is very minimal for me or not, if I'm having to use one of my hands to hold this cane, I'm going to go ahead and put it in front of me. There are times where it can be frustrating by jabbing you in the stomach, but that is a separate topic on how we can avoid that. In my mind, I typically still use it functionally rather than using it just as an ID cane. So I'll open it up to anyone else. Anyone else here use a cane? And so, if you happen to be someone who is using it less for the function, do you still, quote unquote, use it functionally, even if it's principally IDing yourself as someone with low vision? As someone with low vision, sorry. Hey, Joey, go ahead.
Actually, I wanted to illuminate on this because I am an orientation and mobility specialist intern studying to be an O&M. And when it comes to people with low vision and cane technique, I would recommend consult your local O&M because there are specific cane techniques that actually might be able to work with you if you still have a lot of remaining functional vision that are considered to be like a lighter technique. So what that means is depending on how much functional vision you have, you might not need to arc the cane. For somebody who might have a lot of functional vision, but perhaps you might still not necessarily be as confident with every single elevation change, with every single drop off and all of that, and you just want to double check, in which case you may end up qualifying for a particular cane technique that is still lighter duty, but still involves sweeping and still involves arcing that cane. So even if you do, again, have a lot of functional vision, using that cane and making sure that it's moving might still be something that could be beneficial to you, because what often ends up happening with people with low vision who feel as though that they have enough to still see and still have enough to get around is you might end up limiting how you're able to use that vision. By having the cane on the ground and moving, if that's something that's needed with where your vision's at, it verifies whatever information your vision is giving you, double checking, making sure like, hey, there's a step that's as big as I think that step is supposed to be. And that allows you, instead of looking straight down at the ground, which is pretty common, especially with people who are newer to vision loss, newer to being low vision, instead of you looking straight down at the ground, you're able to put your vision up and forward. And so you're able actually to use that vision a little bit more. I like to say, I think like this allows me to use my vision recreationally so that I get to stop and enjoy the world around me. But when in doubt, if you ever have questions, I would say it's a case-by-case basis and consult your local orientation and mobility specialist if you're able to get a hold of them and able to get a hold of training. Because again, even with the same condition, it may be different from person to person what particular techniques are recommended. When in doubt, heavier duty techniques will keep you safe. So if you're like, I'm not sure, or I don't know if I have access to an O&M, then sticking with the standard, moving the cane, making sure that you're arcing, again, will keep you safe. And you still are able to use your vision and keep it up and forward then.
Joey, what does making sure that you're arcing mean exactly?
That is a great question. So what it means when you are making sure that you're arcing is that your wrist is moving from side to side. And that means that for you're moving your cane tip. So the purpose behind arcing and the purpose behind that is each time that you check with your cane, you're checking for your next step. So you are making sure, hey, the step is where I think it should be. Hey, there's nothing in front of me that I don't want to run into. Hey, this is as deep as I think it's supposed to be. And then when you take your next step, you arc, you move your wrist to check on the opposite side to verify before that. So again, it might be a little bit confusing to explain over a Zoom call. So once again, I would recommend checking with your local orientation and mobility specialist, which is the person who teaches cane technique, and then also anything else that is safety and travel related. So even if you're not a cane user, there still is benefits to seeking out orientation and mobility training. And then also for the point about getting jabbed in the stomach, a quick tip that is an easy fix for a lot of people is making sure that your cane is not directly next to your waist, making sure it's about a hand space above your or away from your waist, because that gives you a little bit of reaction time. So that way, if you end up getting caught in a crack, your cane doesn't get caught in you.
Right. All of those are great points, Joey. Thank you so much.
This is Bo. I was going to say, I thought those were great points, but especially about the like giving your eyes a little bit of a break. I use my cane a lot, and I also don't use my cane a ton. But when I use it, I kind of do a fairly standard sweeping motion of it with a rolling ball cane, but walk very quickly. I like to walk very fast and kind of sort of use the combination. I'm not using it to really feel my way along completely, but I sort of take in all the information that is coming that way. But I think that when you do use it that way and you kind of get the practice down of that, it really helps a lot to like, after you've worked, give your eyes a break, even if you still got your eyes open and are looking, but you can kind of move around more quickly and are not solely reliant on your vision. And it really does kind of help relax you, I think, once you sort of learn how to do that. And I like the point of calling it recreational vision, but it's really just sort of allowing your eyes to kind of do whatever, you know, take in whatever you want to take in from what's going along, but not make your safety as you get home something that's vision reliant. And so that is kind of how I do it. I will sometimes hold it up by my side in like super crowded places, but I just think once you learn how to use it, I think I'm fastest and easiest if you kind of use it as a rolling ball and just sort of move it quickly as you go. And it doesn't have to be a big sweep if you know kind of where you are, but you can get into a more smooth motion with it that way, I think.
Thanks so much, Bill. I want to call out that you live in New York, so we don't call it walking fast, we just call it walking. But I do appreciate you sharing.
Hey, this is Paul Laurie again, and I was just wondering if Joey, if you would discuss, if you can, what shorelining technique is and when it might be best to use something like that, if you know.
Yeah, of course. So shorelining, you might also hear it referred to as trailing. So basically, there are a couple different methods of trailing, but it is when you are following along some type of surface. It might be a wall, it might be a grass line, it might be a rick divider. And so that can be helpful if you are looking for something in particular, especially if you're on the end of the spectrum that has less remaining functional vision. So by following whatever thing, that gets you to the thing that you're searching for. With shorelining, you don't want to use it all of the time. You want to use it when you're looking for something in particular. And it could also be helpful too if you're following along a straight line and if you're trying to establish a straight line of travel. So some people have a hard time where they feel like they're ping-ponging off of things and they're kind of veering. A solution to that could be temporarily shorelining and following along a straight line for a little while and then returning to walking away from it. That sets you up for walking in a straighter line. So those are some times when people might want to use shorelining and some of the reasons why people might want to use it.
Thank you.
I love that, Paul. Thank you for bringing that up. That is a term that I'd never heard once before, but it sounds like what I would do sometimes in an airport, where in particular, if I were at a moving sidewalk and just wanted to basically have my cane keeping me a certain distance away from the side of the moving sidewalk while also knowing as I was coming to the end of the moving sidewalk. Obviously, a lot of those have auditory signs once you're coming toward the end of them. But that's really cool to know the term there. Thank you, Joey, for that. And Paul.
Awesome. Also, I heard going back to arcing, because there was a question on that earlier. To clarify for arc width, most of the time, and again, my caveat for everything is consult your local O&M, but most of the time when you're arcing and you're trying to figure out, am I doing it wide enough? It should be about an inch beyond your widest point. The reason why is if it goes much wider, you're going to get your cane caught in a bunch of stuff that you don't need it caught in. You're going to make contact with every chair and bench that you might have never crossed paths with. But if you have it too narrow, then you're going to make contact with that with your shoulder or your hip or anything else. So by having your cane tip landing about an inch beyond the widest point on either side, then that means that you're keeping yourself covered and protected in a way where you're still efficient.
Right. I appreciate that, Joey. Well, this has been a super productive call. I will be proud to tell Jessica about all that we learned tonight before she listens to the call whenever she's available again. Thank you for listening, Jessica, if you made it this far. I do want to hear what others have to say, but I also want to be able to turn off the recording. So if there are any folks here who have any questions or comments they want to make once the recording is turned off, they get to do that shortly after the top of the hour. But before I name the calls we have to look forward to the rest of the month of February, are there any specific topics or questions that people want to, or sorry, rather comments or questions that people want to make sure to share during the actual recording? Okay. Sorry, I muted myself for a second, but I'm going to go ahead and say huge thank you to everyone who's here. We're obviously going to continue this conversation, but I want to say thank you for everyone who's listening. after the fact to the recording of this call. We put all the recordings on our LHON.org website for anyone who happens to be on this call and wants to be able to listen to another call. There are years and years, days worth of calls that you could sit and listen to if you wanted to. But before I turn the recording off, I do want to remind everyone about the upcoming calls we have. Liz, I have them in front of me, but correct me where I'm wrong, please, if you don't mind. Our next LHON call is a LHON sisterhood call. This is Thursday.
No, that one already happened.
Right, that one already happened. I'm checking this one before I say it. February 6th already happened too. So I'm moving. Then this one happened because we're on it right now. The next one that's actually happening, I'm telling the truth now, no edits. This is a one-take call here. LHON affected young adults. This call is next Tuesday, February 13th at 5 p.m. So those young adults can still celebrate Valentine's Day the next day.
5 p.m. Pacific, just to be clear.
Yes, 5 p.m. Pacific. Thank you. The next call is LHON Pacific Northwest Connect. This is Thursday, February 15th at 7 p.m. Pacific. The next call we have is LHON Midwest Connect. This is on Monday, February 19th at 7 p.m. Central. The next one after that is a spouses or similar of those affected by LHON. That's February 20th. That's a Tuesday, February 20th at 5 p.m. Pacific. The next call after that one will be dads of LHON affected, kids of all ages. So any dad of someone who is affected, that call is Wednesday, February 21st at 5 p.m. Pacific. The next call is LHON Assistive Technology. Those calls we do not do every month, but those are really exciting calls if you can make it. That next call is Monday, February 26th at 5 p.m. Pacific. Really busy month we have here. The next call is Navigating Employment. That is Wednesday, February 28th. We'll probably talk about lots of things that were discussed here tonight, but also dig even deeper on a lot of those topics. So join if you can. Again, that's Wednesday, February 28th at 5 p.m. Pacific. And that is what we have for the month of February. So a bunch of really exciting calls. If you get a chance to make it any of those, enjoy them. Take your own questions to those topics, sometimes a smaller group, sometimes a bigger group than this. But I hope you all enjoy the conversation there. With that, I want to tell you when our next LHON Live call is, because we always try and do that where we can. It's always the first Wednesday of each month, which next month will be Wednesday, March 6th. So 3/6/24. And we will look forward to chatting with you then. It's always the exact same call-in information, the exact same Zoom link or dial-in phone number you used tonight. And it's always 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, just like many of those calls that I just listed were. With that, I'm going to go ahead and turn off the recording, and the rest of us can continue our conversation. One moment.